Podfade.
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 Oh, is that the thing where you start out podcasting and then you keep going, you keep going, you put loads of episodes out and then suddenly you stop?
Yes.
That's what it is. You've told me about this before.
Yeah, it's a term for when a podcast just suddenly disappears.
Mm.
For which I have a number which I listened to in the past. There's a Beatles one that did a really good, like, 4-episode run and then stopped.
Just like that?
Yeah.
And no explanation?
Nope. No, they came back, like, maybe 3 months later going, yeah, we're just going to tinker with the format a little bit. Nah, never heard from again.
Oh, and I can think of a few as well. I'm not going to name them, but I can think of a few that are still sat in my... We use Pocket Cast.
Yeah.
Feel free to sponsor us, Pocket Cast. But I use that app, and they're just sat there right at the bottom, like wistfully waiting for one day where an episode might come back. And the last time that I listened to one of them, I think it was something like July 2019.
It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen, is it?
It's never going to happen.
Anyway, you're mentioning Podfade, I suspect, because it's been a while since we've recorded.
It's, well, we've done bits. Mm. We did quite a bit over Christmas with films and stuff like that.
Yeah, we did Christmas films.
Yep,
yeah,
and then we did Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Came back with that and
yes.
Our top tens of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is our first main show, I think, since November.
Yeah.
Which is kind of embarrassing, considering we were, for a long time, we were every week, record on a weekend, get out at the start of the week.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's been a lot on telly over Christmas.
No, there hasn't. Nothing of much note, I would have to say.
Yeah.
If we had got the Radio Times, which we didn't this year round, I think there wouldn't have been quite as much circling of the shows than perhaps they would have been in past years for me.
I don't think you would ever put circles in the Radio Times.
I have done that before, yes.
Honey, you once got the Radio Times and I wasn't allowed to read it because you wanted to save it so you can sell it on eBay years later.
It's still upstairs.
It's getting binned. You tell me to throw away my DVDs and then you want to keep bloody Radio Times.
The Radio Times isn't in the cloud.
So I think the only real things we watched over Christmas, I watched the Not Going Out Christmas special on New Year's special.
Did you? Oh, did I watch it with
you? Yes, you did.
Yes, I did, didn't I? Yes.
You watched Black Narcissus?
Yeah, Black Narcissus, which got a pummeling from the critics. It's beautiful Gemma Arterton. Like, oh, she's so watchable. And Alessandro Nivola. Do you remember the last time I...
Wasn't it on X Factor? Italian
lads.
I was
about to say, do you remember the last time I saw Alessandro Nivola? And of course, you won't remember because you're not in my mind. But the last time I saw him was in Jurassic Park 3. Have you seen Jurassic Park 3?
I've seen every Jurassic Park film, mm-hmm. sadly. But the 2 and 3 just meld into one in my
okay.
mind.
Okay, so he's a young lad called Billy, who is mates with Alan Grant in JP3.
How young?
Oh, he's probably in his like 20s.
Right, okay, yeah. Okay, so...
He's not like one of the kids. He's like...
I thought he's the one who scared 30s. The shit out of in the first one with
no,
the claw.
No, with the claw, yeah, no, it's not him.
But Alan Grant doesn't like kids.
No, he doesn't. Doesn't want them. Doesn't like them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I saw him in that and it's been a long time since I've seen him. I'm sure he's been in loads of stuff, but it was nice. He came back and he's all grizzly and he's beardy and he's having fun with nuns. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It could have been a bit more repressed for me. I could have done with a bit more repression.
Debauchery?
No, it's not. Black Narcissus isn't about that. It's not. That's the whole point. It's about sexually repressed people, mainly nuns. And what happens when, you know, a man comes into their world.
So it's not like The Devils then?
No, I mean, that's a film.
That's a film.
Yeah, we watched that once, didn't we?
Yes. But I think, going back to yeah. Christmas TV, yeah, I don't think we quite know what to make of that. That was a bloody hell film.
That was an interesting film.
But going back to Christmas TV, we did spend, and I know we spoke about it on the show, on various different shows, we spent a good 2 weeks switching on TV for the darts at midday.
Yep.
Watching it through to the end of that, which sometimes was like 5 o'clock.
Yes.
Having some tea, and then at 6 o'clock, starting again.
Yeah, and actually counting down, being like, oh, we've got like an hour before the darts comes back on tonight.
Yeah.
Who's on tonight? Who's against who? And we got to know, I've been thinking about this, right? I think The Darts is just brilliant drama because the people are characters. Like, they've got their own names, you know, like the wizard and all the other names that have just dropped out of my head right now. Give me some names. What are the other names that the...
Ryan Searle.
Right. Yeah, but like, they're special names. Like, they're wrestling names.
MVG.
That's it, yeah. Michael Van Gerwen. Love Michael Van Gerwen.
I can only name the old ones now. Like, the painter. The artist, Kevin Painter.
And Gerwen.
Gerwen Price.
Yes.
The Iceman.
The Iceman. I thought you were going to say it. Yeah, the Iceman. Yeah. I mean, we watched this, like, non-stop, and now it's just fallen out of my head. But I love it because they're the characters, and they build up the rivalries between them, and you get to know them. You know, they've got their walk-on music, and it's sad they didn't have the crowd there, but actually I thought it was great. Drama over the Christmas period with the darts.
You do get a bit obsessed with the darts.
Yeah, I love the darts. Love the darts. Got history with the darts.
You need to stand up when you say that.
Oh yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I'm not able to. I'm recording a podcast. But yeah, that was kind of it really, wasn't it? It was sport and a couple of shows, but we didn't really watch any of the sort of the big Christmas specials, like quiz specials and things like that, did we?
Was there anything?
There was quite a lot. Like, Channel 4 did a few bits of like end of the year, what's happened, but yeah, we didn't really do anything like that. So it's quite nice to come into this year and almost like start afresh and see what's coming out.
Yeah.
And it's been a brilliant start.
Yeah.
Cue the TV music.
Watching television. What are we starting with?
So I'm going to start with Finding Alice, which is an ITV drama starring Keeley Hawes and everyone else you can possibly think of. That had the first 6 episodes are up and you're able to watch them, and I have. It's really difficult. I've taken a big deep breath there. It's really difficult to explain to you what Finding Alice is about. It is a complete muddle, right? They were
presumably there's someone called Alice who is a bit...
Yeah, that's Keeley Hawes.
Who we need to find at some point.
No, I think she's trying to find herself.
Well, yeah, physically or, you know, either physically or spiritually.
Yes. The premise is there's a death, right? So you can sit a hand up in the air straight away. I was like, right, I'm on board for that. So there's a death and it's the fallout of the death. It was sold, I think, a little bit as like a murder mystery, but it's not that at all. But to try and tell you what it is, I think I'd be here for about half an hour, and I've promised you I'd only do really quick reviews this week. You told me that I wouldn't be capable of doing that, so I'm cutting it fine here already, looking at Rewatch.
Keeping an eye.
The best thing about this is that Keeley Hawes and everyone else within the show, and I'm talking, you know, you've got Joanna Lumley, you've got Nigel Havers, you've got Jason Merrills, I'm like, you know, you've got Kenneth Cranham, Gemma Jones, funnily enough, from The Devils.
Yes, yep, we're tying everything in.
So you've got all these brilliant actors, actresses, who were, you know, top of their game, all coming together for this great, great cast, and all looking at bereavement in a different way, because each family member comes to the bereavement differently, each friend, etc. So the thing that I love about this show is that it looks at bereavement in a really authentic way. There are scenes with Keeley Hawes, who has suffered a bereavement out of the blue, where she goes on almost like a bit of a manic rant. And I felt like Keeley Hawes the other day when I was explaining to our dentist what had happened to us.
Yeah.
And you can imagine the conversation, is it comes out of your mouth in a way that is kind of shocking to people, and you're kind of going, I need to get my son's teeth looked at now. He's my son that's living. My other son died. And it just comes out like that. But they were born on the same day. And it's that sort of frantic, I need to get this out. I'm not quite sure how. I'm just going to tell you how it is that Keeley Hawes brings to the party here. And that's why I found myself like quite emotionally tied to this show.
Yeah.
Particularly when she, there were some really funny moments in like the morgue, for example, which we've had really funny conversations about the morgue. It's not really a funny place, but you can have some really funny conversations about death and the morgue and funerals, etc. Yeah. And that's what I really like about this show. I wondered whether it was almost like when you were talking to me about Ricky Gervais's Afterlife.
Yes.
And the way that you knew that there were issues with Afterlife, and you've talked about that in previous episodes. You've said that to me when you've been describing it. So you know there's issues with it, but there's certain things that really resonated with you as someone who has been through a bereavement.
Absolutely.
Now, that's what I had here. And again, probably on a different wavelength to Afterlife, but again with this one, there were things that I found were problematic. It's a bit all over the shop. There are some really crazy plot lines and plot devices that are sort of held up and then dropped. You don't know who to trust. People are coming into Keely Hawes's life and you're kind of like, I don't really know who this character is and what they want. And maybe that's the whole point, but it's almost like they've got every type of plot device and they've thrown it all at this, rather than perhaps what I would have loved was for them to streamline it down and just to stick with the fact that there's a bereavement out the blue. How is this family going to cope and what is going to happen with that added element of humour and pathos? Mm. That's what I would have loved to have seen it. I've seen all six episodes so far. There must be more to come because it hasn't come to an end yet. There's like cliffhangers and things. I don't know how many episodes there are left. I thought there'd just be six because the six were up.
That's weird. Surely they wouldn't just put like...
Well, that's what I thought.
But, I mean, I'm surprised it's only been six because literally every time I've come down from work or from having a nap or from nipping upstairs to grab some chocolate for you...
Thanks.
Still Alice is... Or Finding Alice. Is
Still Alice.
What's Still Alice?
Well, she is Still Alice.
Finding Alice has been on our TV.
Yeah.
Like, you've been just sneaking in 2 seconds here and there.
I think it's because I kind of want to get past all of the rubbish. Like, all the plot lines that I just find fanciful and silly. And get to the end to see what happens at the end. There are some mystery elements to it. I think you have to have a drama, but... I just want to get to the end and see what happens, but I'm not entirely sure I can recommend this because it is such a muddle.
It's a six-parter.
No.
That's what it says.
But it doesn't finish. It doesn't end. Like, there are loads of things that are yet to be concluded.
Well, it says here there's...
That can't be right. Do you think I've watched the wrong thing?
The series is made up of six episodes, each an hour long.
That can't be right. It doesn't come to an end.
Well,
people are doing things. Do you think there's going to be like a series two then?
No, I think you've probably just not watched the last episode or something.
I probably haven't. Oh, well. I'll go back and have a look at that then.
Please don't turn off this podcast.
No, yeah.
I really hope that to be the case.
Yeah, I know, so do I.
Whatever happens, we will put on like our Instagram what exactly has happened to Elaine here.
I'm sure I watched. Maybe I only watched five then, and I haven't watched six.
You can't possibly have watched any less than five. Because I swear, every time I've looked at that TV, Keely Hawes has been on it.
But you, oh, come on, you've got to love Keely Hawes.
Well, yes.
She's amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
Amazing in everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my 5 minutes of for Finding Alice.
8 minutes.
Not quite sure I can recommend it.
Especially not now.
Yeah, bit of a muddle.
Yes. And now that Keely Hawes has gone off our screen, I now see Joe Absalom when I'm coming downstairs.
Yeah, there's two shows that I'm watching at the moment. Finding Alice.
Which
still
may have been finished.
And I'm also watching another ITV drama, which is called The Bay.
How Are the Bay.
Set in Lancashire. Please don't ask me where. I only saw it was Lancashire today, so that I could tell you where it was, because I knew you would ask me. So when series one came out of this show, I think this was pigeonholed as Broadchurch part two.
Okay.
Because it is, as the title would suggest, at the coast. And there's lots of scenes at the coast, there's lots of like seagull noises, there are a lot of cafes looking out onto the sea. This time she's got a flat that looks out onto the sea, so it is... Why are you looking smug?
Well, no, I'm more concerned that I didn't realise this was a second series or something.
Oh, right, okay.
And I'm just wondering if it's in Whitley Bay and you just haven't realised.
I just haven't realised.
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
See, it's been a while since we've podcasted. This is what's happened in the interim.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a crime drama. This is a murder mystery, which is probably why I like it, because you know I like that sort of thing.
Yes.
I wasn't massively taken with series one. It had some brilliant cast. Morven Christie is the police officer who is at the centre of both seasons.
Okay.
She is a really quietly compelling presence. She is different to your usual grizzled men who have a drink problem, for example. You know, we get those tropey detectives.
Yes.
She's a young woman. She's got two kids. She, you know, she makes mistakes, but she's very good at her job. She's probably better because she's a family liaison officer, which I think is a really interesting switch as well. So she's not just a detective in inverted commas, a sort of like, you know, sometimes people are just generic detective in these shows.
Yes.
She actually has a role, and it's a very specific role, which means that she has to go into the house. And a lot of the time when you're watching these shows, you're thinking, how is this detective meeting people at work, going into the home all the time? Mm. But because she's the family liaison officer, she has to be there. That's her job. So she does a really good job of being a complex character, a younger woman, rather than, you know, your typical grizzled detective. We come to season two. So there's a slight difference because she did something in season one that meant that she was demoted. So she starts off on the back foot in this one. She's not particularly getting on with her colleagues. She's finding it hard to be second fiddle to other colleagues because obviously she's been demoted. She has a difficult relationship with people. But as this goes on, again, the cast, I mean, it's just like with Finding Alice. I can just list the people that Stephen Tompkinson, James Cosmo, Sharon Small, Joe Absalom, as you know. Just
is it the murder of Saskia that they're investigating?
It's brilliant. I really like it. And it got an absolute pummeling in a review I read earlier on today. I think it was in The Guardian. It just sort of had like two lines on it saying it's just your bog standard, you know, crime drama. I think that really underplays it, undersells it. It's a different type of crime drama. It's got brilliant acting in. I don't know what's going to happen in it. I really look forward to watching each episode because I just don't know how it's going to play out. And most of the time I can guess sort of three episodes beforehand what on earth's going to happen, you know, how it's going to play.
Mm.
So I think this is, if you like your ITV crime dramas, if you liked your Broadchurch, I'm not saying it's the same as Broadchurch. When you throw Broadchurch into things, it's quite difficult anyway, isn't it? Because it was zeitgeisty.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you like those sorts of things, if you like your ITV crime dramas, give The Bay a go. And if you haven't seen series one, I would recommend going back, seeing series one, seeing what happened, so you can get the context for where she is in life in series two.
Do you think it's just that ITV crime dramas are a bit of an easy target?
Yeah, that could be it, couldn't it? That they're put all into one box. But then, you know, ITV has done really, really well recently with their crime dramas. Des, for example, was on my top 10 of last year's TV when we did our top 10.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of true crime and made dramas from that recently. And they're doing your fictional crime as well. Now, not all of those are going to play well. I'm not saying, you know, that they're all going to be brilliant. But if you like this sort of, if this is your sort of, you know, this is right up your street, then, you know, give it a go. And the quality of the acting, the quality of the people involved, I think really speaks for this show. It's really well produced. You're never quite sure what's going to happen. It's never tropey. So, you know, I think sometimes you think it's just going to be, you think it's going to be one thing, and it isn't that low quality type of drama.
I mean, it's not my thing.
No, yes, Mark, I know that. I'm not trying to sell it to you.
It's pretty far down. Well, it sounded like you were addressing me directly.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm addressing the world. Let's talk about something that we've watched together.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about Russell T Davies' masterpiece, It's a Sin.
That's a bit strong.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's, but we've only watched one episode.
Yeah, that's why I think it's a bit strong.
Yeah, I know, but I cannot see it losing track, losing pace. I was totally sucked into It's a Sin, and I know there's been so many people talking about it, hasn't it? It's had this real, not, I won't say push, but it's not push. It's not the people pushing it, but there's been a, what's the word I'm looking for? anticipation.
I somewhat disagree with you there. I think for people like us who follow a lot of TV and film podcasts and stuff like that, there's been a lot of talk about it. I've not heard anyone talk about it outside of those circles.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by outside of those circles? So I've been reading about this for months now, even when it was called The Boys, before it turned into It's a Sin.
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't.
And I've
okay.
not heard of anyone watching it themselves.
Oh, and that, so that's interesting, because my timeline, my personal timeline, is absolutely full of people watching it and saying, oh, I'm up to episode blah, I'm up to... Because you didn't know... That's interesting, actually, that makes sense. Because you didn't know that all of the episodes were up on Channel 4, on all four. And I had already said, oh, so-and-so's already got to episode 3. And you were like, oh, they can't have done, because episode 3 hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, no, I trusted the linear thing of TV.
So that, I think that's where the disconnect is. I think people in my world have been talking about this for a long time and are watching. I mean, like I say, it, every second person on Twitter is talking about where they're up to. They're quoting bits of it. I've had to turn it off. Whereas for you, you've
already
heard
about
it. There's
a test match on an FA Cup weekend, so my Twitter's quite different.
Your Twitter's really different. So I think that's really interesting. Should we talk a little bit about what It's a Sin's about for people who don't know?
Can I just talk about my history with Russell T Davies?
Because
I think I know less of him than most people.
Okay.
Or certainly most people who watch a lot of TV. Because I've only ever seen Doctor Who and Dark Season.
Dark Season
is one of the best kids shows ever.
Okay.
I've got it on DVD kicking out somewhere. It's probably at my mum's house somewhere. It was a really quite scary TV show for kids. I think it was 2 3-part stories. In the first one, they were giving people... Some people came to this school who were wearing like really dark sunglasses with like... bleach white hair, and giving out computers that were turning the students into like zombies and stuff like that. And then the second one, they found a massive computer under the school.
It sounds very Doctor Who-y, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it hugely is. It was the first acting performance of Kate Winslet was one of the characters in it. It's really, really good. And then I've seen his Doctor Who's.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I don't think I've seen anything else by him. For someone who is so iconic in sort of British TV.
Yeah. So you've not seen Queer as Folk.
Nope.
You've not seen Cucumber.
Nope.
Which won the recent one. And you've not seen Years and Years.
Well, I think we watched the first episode and then...
Yeah.
I think I've got it still recorded on the box to watch. But yeah, I've never got around to...
Yeah, it wasn't my favourite Russell T Davies. My history with Russell T Davies... So I saw someone talk about this the other day and I thought, oh God, that's exactly the same as me. Russell T Davies, for a lot of people, I think perhaps was the first time they saw on television gay culture.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and I think I was absolutely in that boat. When I first watched Queer as Folk, it was a real eye-opener to me of other people's experiences and gay culture and gay life and... it really was an educational piece of TV, and really taught me a lot. And I think a lot of his TV has continued to do that as life has gone on, and as you know, the many years, because that was out in 1999, as the many years.
Wow,
is
that long ago was?
Yeah. And so I think for a lot of people that is the case, and there was a really good interview on another podcast that we listened to, the Pilot TV podcast, with Russell T Davies, where he talked about gay people in TV, and he talked a lot about soap operas being really at the heart of that happening, and just spoke really, really eloquently, which I'm doing a complete disservice by rambling here, but really, really eloquently about the history of gay characters and gay people within the television.
Yeah.
And he has a major part to play with that.
So I remember Beth Jordash on Brookside, and watching it with mum, and they were playing out that she fancied someone, and they were playing out it was this one guy, and mum was like, it's so obvious it's going to be that girl. And I remember, I must have been about 10, and I was like, Really? I didn't realise that happened. Because it... But it wasn't on TV at the time. I had no exposure to that world. So, yeah, I think especially Channel 4 as well is normally ahead of the rest of the world on there.
Yeah, I think that came up as well in the things I've been reading.
Because
yeah.
That's what Queer as Folk was on. Yeah.
So, yeah, and obviously It's the Sins on as well, which takes us round, doesn't it, to the... Russell T Davies has said that he has specifically not looked at HIV and AIDS within his TV. I think partly because when he, from what I understand, when he wrote Queer as Folk, he purposefully didn't put it in there because he didn't want to.
Yeah.
He didn't want to go, you know, to go and say, oh, well, I'm writing about gay people. Right, I'm going to talk about HIV and AIDS. Yeah. Or that has to be at the heart of it. But he has now come back and he's looked at his own personal history. This is very, very autobiographical from what I've read. I mean, he's naming people after people that he still knows in real life. Mm. He's taking people who have... very sadly passed away, and he's taking all of those stories and he's bringing them to the screen so we see these stories because they are swept under the carpet. And one of the things that I read about doing so much reading for this because he's been writing a lot about this, and I think to read the writer's perspective is really important in a show like this to learn more about it. And he is saying that, you know, there are people now who said that their son died of cancer when that is not the case, and they continue to perpetuate that lie and no one is allowed to say the truth or to grieve in the way that they wanted to, or to be at the funeral, or to say that they're someone's boyfriend.
Yeah.
All of those things. And I think that we've only watched one episode, but that will absolutely come out in that show, and we will see those stories in this show, which is why I started off by saying I thought it was, you know, masterful. I watched that episode last night and I haven't been able to stop thinking about the themes, not just the themes that we all know about with HIV and AIDS, where things are not going to turn out well for a number of our characters. We know that. We know that's going to happen. But I just don't think I've seen on TV for such a long time a group of characters come together, a group of friends come together, very much from situations or family backgrounds where they're not able to be themselves, where they are living essentially a lie, or they are not allowed to be their authentic selves, who then all congregate together in one place and are having the time of their lives. And that spoke to me just as much as some very poignant and really quite touching isn't enough to the word touching doesn't do it, but you know, some scenes that were really quite shocking,
yes,
in terms of the way that people were treating other people,
absolutely,
without going too much into it. So it really, really stayed with me, and I think it's, you know, obviously we haven't seen all the episodes yet, but I am expecting that this is going to continue in the same vein.
So I 100% would not have watched this if we weren't doing the podcast. It just wouldn't be on my radar. The same reason I've not seen many other Russell T Davies shows. But this is so well made. The characters are so well drawn. The casting, I mean, Keely Hawes is in it.
She was doing it for a moment, wasn't she? But she was.
There is a bit of casting that I didn't know about. I don't know if that was a surprise or whether it was announced.
I know who you're talking about. There is someone who pops up in episode one that we typically see in other shows that we watch from the past. You're watching one at the moment. And I think there are other big named, from what I've heard, because I've heard a few spoilers, there are other big named actors as well that are going to pop up as cameos in the future.
I'm aware of one.
Probably the same one. Yeah. So, yeah, and that storyline in particular, the person that you're talking about, really powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really, really powerful. So,
I think it's just so well done. I'm not quite going to go and say it's a masterpiece yet after 45 minutes of screen time. I mean, I'm normally the one that's
I'm just thinking I've turned into you this week, haven't I? Yeah.
Like that. But yeah, it's so well done. And I really would recommend it watching anyone. It's got an awesome 80s soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably why you called it a masterpiece, isn't it?
That's probably it, yeah, that's probably in the back of my head. I think there's just such a lot of joy about it as well, of these young people who are, you know, they're together in like college, just that they're all starting out in the world of work, and we've all been in that situation where you meet people that are like your tribe, your people, you just click, and you're learning together and you're experiencing life together, and that's what you've got here in this show, and it's just so, I think, powerful to show you. I mean, there's scenes in terms of religion, for example, of, you know, people trying to conversion therapies and praying gayness away and all of that. So I think it could be, in other hands, it might be quite light and throwaway, but you know that this is real, and there's a sense. In those scenes in particular, there's a real sense of threat.
Yeah.
You know,
Foreboding
and threat. And you know that it's not just roll your eyes, they're just being a bit silly. You know that this lad might end up being killed.
Yes.
Because of the religious beliefs of his family.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it's really powerful stuff. Anyway, It's a Sin, Channel 4. You can watch all the episodes. See if you agree with my masterpiece once you watch all of it.
Or watch 5 and then start to review it.
And then think, it hasn't quite finished properly yet. Right, now we still can't go to the pictures.
Correct.
Because we're not allowed. But you have watched a film this week, so shall we jump to the movies?
Yes, let's do that. One Night in Miami.
All right. Yes, please. Should we go next month?
Do you know much about this?
The only thing that I know about One Night in Miami is that you watched it the other day, and as per usual, I came in and watched the last 5-10 minutes with you and went, oh, this looks like a good film. It's happening all the time at the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I did it with Queen and Slim, didn't I, the other week?
Yeah, Queen and Slim.
Like, oh, this is really interesting.
Black Klansman,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, One Night in Miami. Can I also say the thing where I listed that you had, it was on Amazon Prime, isn't it?
Yes.
So it's on Amazon Prime, and you know on Amazon Prime, when you pause it, the people in the scene come up and the people who are playing it come up, so you'll have, you know, the character name and then the actor playing it came up.
Yeah.
And I listed them off and I went, oh, that's good, isn't it?
Something along the lines of, a lot of big names in this.
Big names in this, isn't it? That's a funny scene with all of those people in. And then you had to tell me that they were the four main players in the whole of the film.
So this is an adaptation of a stage play. It's been around a little while, I think. And it is the fictional retelling of a real occurrence of four people meeting in a hotel room. Those people are Malcolm X, Cassius Clay, Jim Brown, who probably isn't well known in the UK, but is a legendary American football player, and Sam Cooke.
And those were the four, weren't they, that I saw on the screen and went, ooh, exciting.
Yeah. they've met up because Cassius Clay, as he's known then, has just won his big fight against Sonny Liston as a 7-1 outsider. He was very young. Sonny Liston was the dominant heavyweight boxer at the time, and people hadn't really given Cassius Clay much chance. But he had quite famously won this fight, and it is the launch pad for the rest of his career. I'm going to talk about the cast first of all, because it's quite a bizarre cast. There is Leslie Odom Jr. playing Sam Cooke.
Amazing.
Who we know from Hamilton.
And he gets to sing.
Yes, yeah. Again. Obviously, with it being Sam Cooke. There's Aldous Hodge playing Jim Brown. Now, I know Aldous Hodge from The Invisible Man.
I didn't see.
No, he's in a lot of things. You would know him.
Would I?
Yeah, yeah. Eli Gorey as Cassius Clay, who is in Riverdale. You would know him best. He was the son of Benefit Queen. in Glow.
In Glow.
In a quite a famous episode, quite one of the standout episodes from season two.
Yeah, okay.
But stealing the show, bizarrely, is Kingsley Benadire playing Malcolm X, who we know from Vera.
Vera, the ITV crime drama, just to link all the way back in this episode. Vera, which on our the day before we got married, we ended up watching them recording Vera down on the Newcastle quayside.
Yeah,
trying to be an extra.
Walking past Brenda Blethyn in a little coat.
And he was the pathologist in Vera.
Yeah.
For quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, probably at the start. I only came into it late when I've sort of met you, obviously.
And when you started seeing it being filmed live, you know, around the whole of the town.
Yeah. This is basically the story of four people who are at a turning point in their career. Jim Brown is by far the best American football player in the league, in the world, as it would be, because no one else plays it, but is certainly facing a lot of racism. Sam Cooke is becoming a little bit disillusioned with just the club scene that he's playing to largely just upper middle class white audiences. Malcolm X is looking to leave the Nation of Islam group.
Okay.
And then you've got Cassius Clay, who is just about to declare himself Muhammad Ali and say that he has converted to Islam based on his friendship with Malcolm X. I'm going to talk about Cassius Clay for a little bit. I know a bit about boxing, but his fights were all before my time, certainly. I think he fought a little bit into the 80s, but it was set back end of his career and I was only a little baby at the time, so I certainly wouldn't have seen him fight that time. But it's easy to, when you imagine Muhammad Ali, you imagine sort of this 30s fighter, really cocky. This is a 22-year-old Cassius Clay who's still got the swagger and still living the gimmick, essentially, picking up pro wrestling terms and coming out and acting like a pro wrestler would, rather than a quite staid boxer like the rest of them were. But inside, he is extremely insecure, doesn't know where he's going to end up, doesn't know how this announcement of his conversion to Islam is going to go. And it's everyone plays this really, really well. I mean, Leslie Odom Jr. is brilliant, and obviously he sings the Sam Cooke songs.
And I saw that at the end, and the mannerisms and his face, and it was almost like he'd been had some prosthetics or something to sort of change the shape of his head. I thought his forehead looked different, or his hairline had been changed, and you can see he's really, when he's singing, there's real passion there and behind that performance.
Absolutely. This is very stagey. This is four people in a hotel room, mostly. I mean, it cuts away to other scenes. There is an introduction to each four characters, which I suspect isn't fully on the comes from the stage. There is an amazing cameo by Bo Bridges playing a friend of Jim Brown, who one of the scenes of the year already.
Okay.
It sticks with you, and it shows you just the situation that he's in his life. It does well because it's far less stagey than a film that you've got to compare it to, which is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which was released a couple of weeks prior on Netflix. That is just very much takes place in one room, and you cannot help but feel that stagey. This is far less so. But this is expertly directed. And
who's the director?
Regina King.
Oh, amazing.
I need to talk about Regina King. Regina King has been Emmy nominated 5 out of the last 6 years.
Right.
She won 4 of them.
Right.
And in the year she didn't get nominated, she won an Oscar.
Right.
And now she's turning her hand to directing and doing a brilliant job at it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's anything this woman can't do.
No. I mainly recently know Regina King from Watchmen, where she was brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant, as you say. And before that, wasn't she in The Leftovers?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
At a moment there, I was like, oh no. But she was in, and again, brilliant. So I know her mainly as an actress. I'd really like to watch this to see the direction for myself.
I really would recommend it. It's
How long is it?
It's just under 2 hours.
Okay. Because often things that come from the stage are quite short.
Yeah, it's very talky, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And it's just four people a crossroad in their lives, who are friends, not necessarily seeing eye to eye, just having debates about how people are living their life. Not that anyone's right or wrong, it's just people take different decisions. This hasn't had sort of the publicity that I thought it would.
I was just about to say that. I don't think I would have come across this. I've seen it on one podcast that we listened to, and then you watched it, and that's it. That's all my knowledge of it.
But this is so, so good. This is a 4.5-star film for me. I really would recommend it. It's, for me, it's better than Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Okay.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom has the outstanding Chadwick Boseman performance, which, in hindsight, is probably going to win him the Oscar.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you seen it?
No, but what I've heard recently is, because of his own personal circumstances at the time, that performance, he would have been in a lot of pain in that performance. And I think that will push it over at the Oscars. I think that will be a story that will carry it through to the Oscars, as well as his great acting.
But this is a better film. There's not a lot of action in it, as you can probably imagine, because it's four people in a room talking. But it's so, so good and so well played. It's on Amazon Prime, so if you've got Amazon Prime, just can't watch it.
Do you think she might be up for an Oscar for Best Director with this?
I want to make some really horrible comment, because she's female, so of course she won't get nominated.
Oh, Mark.
But, no, seriously.
Are you meaning that ironically?
Yes, I'm meaning that ironically, she should be. She should be. And I think she do everything else. Why not give it, like...
No, it's what I mean is, do you think it's going to have enough traction, it's going to have enough behind it to get it even in the Oscar conversation?
I think it will, yeah. I think it will, based on the subject themes. The Oscars love to get on the on the themes of the year and stuff like that. Yeah, I can see this. I can see this, and I can also see Kingsley Benadire and Leslie Odom Jr. getting Oscar nominations. I really hope so, because they deserve it.
Yeah, and only for like the 5 minutes that I saw. Definitely.
But yeah, seriously, check it out. It's such a good film.
So that's One Night in Miami. It's on Amazon Prime.
Correct, yes.
Lovely. And Finding Alice is on ITV. The Bay's on ITV, and It's a Sin's on Channel 4, all in the UK. We always forget to do that, so good to do it.
I don't know where they might be on in other countries.
No, me neither.
Although, One Night in Miami will definitely be on Amazon, because they bought it in every country.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
So, thanks everyone for joining us on the first main show, in inverted commas, of the year. We've had a few new listeners recently, so if you have joined us of late, first of all, hello, and thank you very much. This is what we call the main show, which was actually how we started off the podcast to begin with, where we talked about the TV and films we would have watched in the past few weeks, didn't we? We started off like that. And we also stuck a date night onto the end as well, just to make the episode really, really long. Date night is where Mark picks film and I have to watch it. I pick film, Mark has to watch it. And we're both in the same room when that happens, funnily enough.
Yes.
But then we found it just became a bit long, so we spun out Date Night into a separate episode. And then we also started a show called After Work Drinks, which is where we talk about the TV and film news that's happened recently. So we should have quite a few After Work Drinks coming up in the future, because I think there's going to be a lot to say about what's happening in the world of TV and film.
Delays.
Yes, it did end up like that quite at the end of last year, wasn't it? Every After Work Drinks was, when is Bond coming out? When is Bond coming out?
But Godzilla vs. King Kong has been brought forward.
I know, yeah. And we've just watched the trailer for that. So we do need to do an After Work Drinks where we talk about the trailer. And the Bond delay.
I think I know what you're going to be saying.
Yes, I think you are. So if you've only just joined us recently, this is what we call the main show, which is essentially TV and film we've been watching during the course of the week. Then we've got Date Night, which is where we watch a film. And then we've got After Work Drinks, which is when we talk about the recent news. So
we'll be back with the main show in 2 months.
Why 2 months?
Because it was 2 months since we did the last one.
Oh, okay. Yes, and also, if you're new to the podcast, I really don't get comedy or humour and have to check everything. And everything Mark says to me, I think, is quite factual, and I have to check. And most of the time, it isn't.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks everyone for coming back and for listening to us ramble on about the TV / film that we've been watching recently.
We'd appreciate if you drop us a follow on Instagram or Twitter at The Honeymoon Pod. And also, if you'd be ever so kind as to drop us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We only accept 5-star reviews, so anything less will be very sad.
Yeah, you don't want to make Mark sad.
His eyes tearing.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks a lot. See you later.
See you soon.